There wasn't a period that I didn't really enjoy. Even the things where my business went up the chute and I had to shut it down, I learned so much from that experience.
Yeah, I've been there.
We're not actually teaching barbering anymore. No, most barbers, yeah. They're teaching a lot of technique, which is based from the Sassoon, which is based from Tony and Guy. It actually comes from all of that. We're just basically recycling it into the men's world.
Every blooming person on Instagram, educator. Yeah, no. You're very good at cutting hair, you're very good at a fade, but can he stand in front of 50 people and explain it perfectly how to do that? Yeah. Massive difference.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there. I'm Anthony Laban. Welcome to another episode of the Noble Barber Podcast. I am here today with Gary Spencer, the great British Barber Bash, and with Gianni Cardinale.
Yep, said it perfectly. Yeah, it's perfect.
Excellent. I managed to say it with my London accent. And we are here at Michael Douglas's studio. Thanks to Gary. You can tell us about your connect that way a bit later on. And with the Barber Bash coming, and obviously, Gianni, you're going to be with them in Glasgow.
That's right.
I just thought it was a good opportunity to get you guys together and actually start talking about your journeys and where and why training's become such a big part of your world. And I guess everyone listening agrees that training seems to be the kind of billboard across our industry at the moment.
Yeah.
That I've never known so much training in any area. It seems to be front and center, which is great. So our standards should be at the highest, our quality should be at our highest, but there still seems to not have a smoothness to it. So maybe over the next kind of 30-40 minutes we can get an angle on that. Gary, I'll let you kick off as the oldest statesman here.
Okay.
If you want to run through the last 40 years of barbering.
Well, to be honest, I started as a hairdresser back in 1986.
Great year.
Loved it. It was my hobby, it was everything. I used to come to London all the time, Sassoons in South Moulton Street, things like that.
And this was in Manchester.
I was from Southport. I'd travel to London from, and basically I hero worshipped all the sort of lead educators and loved the industry. And eventually I ended up with my own salons. And the focus was always strongly on education and trying to be at that sort of higher echelon, if you like. But the world has definitely changed since the 80s and 90s. Things have changed an awful lot. About 11 years ago, I started the Barber Bash. And again, at that time, like you're saying, there was no barbering education as such. There were courses. Josh LaMonica had just started doing his thing. But I sort of took the idea of doing workshops. There weren't many people doing that kind of thing at the time. And we flourished, particularly up until about 3 or 4 years ago. Every week, we were doing workshops across the UK and beyond. And again, I think Gianni as well, you've been heavily involved in education, haven't you, since the get-go.
Yeah. So what was your start into the hair industry?
So I come from almost like a generation of hairdressers. Oh. My mum's a hairdresser, my dad's a hairdresser, my granddad was a hairdresser. But my dad was one of these ones, very similar to what Gary was saying, was someone that was pushing the boundaries a little bit, very passionate about it. He had a stunning hair salon in Northamptonshire. It was like 3-4 stories. It was just beautiful. I went to work for him, and that was my first taste of the hair industry, and I hated it.
Right.
Yeah. Didn't enjoy it at all.
The perm lotion.
What's that?
Perm lotion or something.
It was perm lotion. It was hair washing. It was colours. So it was real. It was women. The women's stuff, basically. Yeah. It wasn't much barbering. Until I started to, give out free haircuts for men. And I started to lean into this kind of passion and wanting to understand more about men's hair. This was really before barbering had this kind of buzz that it has now. Mm. It was more when, you had the likes of Shaw and Barber, and you had a lot of the grungy kind of stuff going on. And that was actually the first ever time, skip maybe 2 years, when I came across Josh LaMonica and Menspire. And that's when I believe really this revolution in the men's hair world was formed, which I believe as well is how this education has all come around. Yeah. It's really sprung from that. Mm. And it's really interesting because it basically birthed this thing where you don't need to be a big brand to offer education. And I believe it all started from that point. It's about 6 years ago.
I think that's interesting. You have got that kind of, you know, like you say, that original pre-boom barbering where you trained with, as a barber, you'd train with your dad or you'd train with the barber and you'd work in a shop and that was your world. And it is 10, 12 years ago. It I don't know if grow up's the right word, but it certainly reached out and became real and proper.
Well, I think for me, up until about 10 or 12 years ago, barbering, as we know, was sort of a second class to hairdressing almost. And the main reason for that was that it was seen as like, I've got to get a haircut. I've got to get it taken off my collar. The styling never hadn't come in. And what we were talking about before about with regards to Gianni, about the way barbers become like a hybrid of the hairdresser and barber, right. That technical ability. And that's what floats my boat, because I was in the 80s and 90s with those very sharp Sassoon sort of fireflies and wedges and even like the Demi Moore cut from back in the day. And it was all tiny, tiny sections and 4.5-inch scissors. And then when I saw the barbering things starting to evolve and that precision coming in, that was what set me sort of the inspiration again, you know?
Yeah. But you're seeing that in the training now. I mean, certainly if you flick through, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of Instagram, you've got 15, 16 different barbers showing you very intricate sectioning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very tight, clean, and scissor cutting suddenly.
Yeah, we're not really, sorry to cut you off there, but we're not actually teaching barbering anymore. No. Most barbers are actually teaching, they're teaching a lot of technique, which is based from the Sassoon, which is based from Tony and Guy. It actually comes from all of that. Mm. We're just basically recycling it into the men's world. What you'll see now, if a guy comes in with a mid-length haircut, 9 times out of 10, a few years ago, we would just clip over, combed it and just, you know, go through it. But now, I really believe that 9 out of 10 barbers will section it all out first. They'll go through and work a classic graduation. You know, that was unheard of a few years ago. So that's just the way that now a lot of barbers are cutting. And, you know, this is why it's happening, you know, all throughout South America and Europe. And because of social media, everybody can see that. Mm. So everybody wants to learn that. And that's what's happening. So
I mean, that's the bit. It's amazing the kind of global voice that barbering suddenly has. Hairdressing certainly hit global kind of, you know, like you say, 80s and 90s. There were these hairdressers that were traveling around the world and getting headlines for it. Whereas now there is the same, you know, it's not just, if you're a barber, you're not just stuck in back streets of Southport doing a two round the back size and a four on top. You've got this opportunity to get out there on this world stage and go and do something.
Yeah, that was the funny thing, because going back to like the 90s and whatever, and we'd go to Salon International and there'd be all these companies. There's people like Rainbow Room, Rita Russ, Sassoons, Charlie Miller, all these people doing seminars at Salon International, and you couldn't get enough of it. They'd be selling tickets, 75 quid a ticket for an hour and a half presentation. But now, obviously, as the world's evolved, we can see that magic on Instagram and we can see that magic on TikTok or Facebook or whatever it might be. So it did lose its mystique somewhat in a way, because we had to go to London or we had to go to a certain place and pay that money to see that happening. And it had like a magical aura about it, where it's very good that it's so much more accessible now with Instagram. And like Gianni said, when all that sort of kicked off, but again, Instagram sort of really exploded 10 years ago, so it fell in perfectly. And a young lad in Ireland or a young lad in Liverpool would see these haircuts happening and think, I want to be as good as that.
But in the same breath, you've got so many people. I mean, you know, Luke and I have been traveling around the country this year to Barber Connect, obviously to Barber Bash several times, to HairCon, all of whom, and obviously we've got Salon International coming up, that have huge barbershop parts of it. Mm. You're heading up to Glasgow with Gary.
Yep, September.
On the 7th of September, well done, let's not forget that. But yeah, the urge to physically be in the room and to physically be on stage and to share that knowledge is still there. People do want to step out of Insta world and be
Funny you should say that, because there's no substitute for being in the real person. Mm. So, and I'm actually working with, I've like got a team of educators work with us. They work at the colleges we do and all the shows we do and stuff. We're actually going to Sassoon's to do a couple of days, the ABC course. It's a male and female course, and they'll learn off the...
As students rather than as educators.
But I want to go. Mm. I actually want to sit in on it, because even after 40 years in the industry, I still get motivated and inspired by it. And you never stop learning. I know it's an old cliche. But with Barber Bash, Barber Bash was born out of all the hair shows having a little tiny bit of barbering in the back, and it was the same guy on stage, the same faces. So we wanted to do something that was totally barber specific, but also matched the culture. So the last thing we wanted was a venue with pink carpet, plastic cups of coffee, and that elevator music playing in the background. We wanted DJs, we wanted these sort of hip venues, concrete floors, you know, that kind of vibe. And people love it. They like coming together. We all like being with people of a similar mind. And again, what we found really worked was the people that they'd relate to at the time, people like Ryan Cullen or Alan Beak or Josh or whoever, Gianni included, to actually go up and meet them and shake their hand was like, I've just met you know, such a body. And, you know, you can't put a price on that.
No, I think that's the nice bit, that it is really accessible. And kind of weirdly, kind of seeing you guys on Insta makes you more approachable. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it does make you someone to, you know, to have a real live conversation. But the bars at all these events, I grew up with all those, I originated out as a hairdresser, and the buzz, I've always been around that hair show. And it's there's a bigger buzz at the barber events than there are at the hair shows. The hair shows seem to have kind of grown up. Do you know what I mean? There still seems something a bit more edgy.
It's a brilliant industry. Yeah. You're not digging roads, are you? You're not up a ladder in January putting slates on a roof or filling a skip full of rubbish. It's a creative industry. There's a reward at the end of it of the client being happy. But getting together, it's just a lot of fun, isn't it, being with like-minded people, people who get what you know about. And do you know what? The drive to an event and the drive back from the event, you do just as much chatting about it, and that can really motivate you. It's the inspiration that people go for, really, isn't it?
But I think that's it. And people wanting that learn. Mm. You know, that was the one thing that we discovered throughout it, is that hunger to be better. You do quite a lot of one-to-one training with yours.
Yeah, a lot of one-to-one, yeah. It's my favourite form of education.
How does that play out?
Well,
do you get that passion from them, or do you get?
I think, you know, what the journey that I've had with education was, you know, when I first started doing my education, even prior to my own brand, we were doing so much things abroad, traveling around the world. You know, I was doing a lot of stuff at the time with Charlie Gray, Dr. Monica, Glenn McGoldrick, these sort of people. And we were actually traveling as a team, and it was the most amazing period I think I've ever experienced. Because it was where you didn't have as much people that kind of built an Instagram following and they just started educating. It was really the start of it. Mm-hmm. And we were at the very forefront of men's hair education. It was literally incredible. And we were doing these US tours, and there was something so authentic and real about it, because we knew that there wasn't many other people doing it. Mm-hmm. So skip that and come into today, when I, you know, decided to do my own education and do my own thing. My goal was to really stay authentic and true, and not kind of teach hype. So it's challenging, because what I've noticed is you actually get less students. The students that you do attract are people that generally are looking at the skill set, looking at generally wanting to get better, as opposed to just wanting to be, a lot of people just, they want to just be around the educator. They want to just see their space, be around them, and be inspired by them as a person. But the actual proper, you know, back to the original education of like maybe going and having a one-to-one experience with a leading educator from like Sassoon, you generally want to home in the skill and the technique. And I've tried to encompass that into the education.
Because with a one-to-one, there's no fraud in that. You know, you can either show
it. It's intense.
You either show it and get it, or you can't. You'll get caught out very quickly. Yeah. And not, no disrespect. I mean, your guys are great, but if you're showcasing on something on stage, it is more drama totally and different. Theatre and so on. To be in a studio one-to-one or in a store one-to-one.
But I think what Gianni's doing is totally right. I think that's where it's going. You learn. Well, when we started doing the workshops 10 years ago, every week we were, it was Facebook at the time was more popular. Yeah. Every day people wanted
I'm
to buy
glad
tickets.
You remember that. I thought you were going to say MySpace for a second.
People wanted to buy tickets. I was inundated with people who wanted to come to Aberdeen, Glasgow, wherever it might be. And then we'd get these groups of 10 or 12 people together and we'd teach them a fade. We'd do a fade demonstration. They'd work on a model. And let's be totally honest with you. The most dissatisfying thing for an educator is when you feel people have gone away without learning something. And that often happened because they'd come, they'd maybe a bit nervous, they'd have the wrong model. So I honestly believe that format is sort of on the way out in a big way, the big groups. The one-to-one education, Gianni's fantastic at it. There are a couple of other people. There's a guy in Manchester, Nath Shapes, who's doing some good stuff, and several others. But I think that is the move forward. If you're going to do it properly, spend that time and really take something away from it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I think you can see it. Certainly, I've seen some of your haircuts in action. And there, you know, you've managed to get that precision across without overcomplicating it. And I think as from a Sassoon's hairdressing background, it's not complicated. It's precise. It's sharp. It's understanding it, but it's not necessarily complicated. It should make sense. Like I say, with a one-to-one, you're not hiding anything from that.
I was speaking to Brody, who works for me, who's worked all over the place with us. And there is only layering, graduation, one length cut. And that's simplify it, keep it simple. There's your adaptation of that, and there's textures and head shapes, etc., taken into consideration. But what we tried to do, I think maybe going back to the 80s, 90s, they tried to make everything really scientific and give everything big, long names. And it used to frighten you to death almost. You think, God, I really don't understand this. I've been doing this a while. I don't get this. But simplify it.
Yeah.
All marketing teaches that. Everything about marketing is simplify. Mr. Apple, you know, it's the easiest programs that sell the most.
Yeah.
So with education, keep it simple.
No, I've just watched so many videos that I know the haircut before it started, and halfway through I've watched their tutorial and I'm thinking, I've no idea what's going on.
Like, it's just too complicated.
It doesn't make any sense. It's an unnecessary complication.
That's so true. And I think that leads me on to what I was just about to say. One of these real issues that we have at the moment, I think, in the industry is, so let's say, for example, you're an educator, you teach these skills, you teach these techniques. One of the problems that I have with my team, for example, and I believe that my team, the team that I have at the moment, I believe that they're some of the most talented barbers that I've seen, and it's an absolute blessing to have them on the team. But they're not very passionate about doing these kind of like tutorials, these kind of
the actual industry at large.
Or even just like, I say to the boys, look, you've got to upload more content. You've got to get on your content game because people need to see what you're doing. And by the more they see what you're doing, the more we can educate together because they're going to want to see you. That's how it kind of happened for me. But they don't have this passion for doing these haircuts for Instagram and then trying to get views and likes. They've actually got more of a passion for the actual industry and fashion and the hair. So it's so difficult because you've got Sam Rascal's 1 million followers, you know, and all he does is haircuts in the salon. And it is educational because you're watching it and you're learning as you're doing it because it's step by step. And then you've got some of the most talented actual hairdressers in the world. Or even youngsters, like I'm saying, like in my team, I believe that I've got this one guy who's about 21. I believe he's one of the best I've ever seen. And he has no inspiration to do those sort of cuts. But yet he may be even more talented as those ones that are doing those cuts.
Well, I think that's that balance, isn't it? That we were saying before, I think if you've got Yeah, I mean, yeah, the guys that are really nailing it, like you're saying, you know, like, you know, with what Sam Rascals is doing, whereas he has the content, but there's real substance behind it. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, Sam's a great barber and he really understands the craft and it comes across.
He's also going to be a barber bash on me, Sam.
And he's going to be in Glasgow.
Sneak that in there.
All roads lead to Barber Bash Glasgow.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's that substance behind it. And, you know, not being
relatable.
Too, yeah, and it makes sense because he does know what he's doing. And so there's no need to put on a dance act to get there. The haircut is itself. We've got a lot of education coming through on Insta. I think that is brilliant content. These creators are amazing at putting that together. Not so convinced there's a huge amount of substance behind it.
No.
And I mean, two must have trained a lot of these guys.
The thing with... Right, you can't have a go at somebody for having a go. I don't blame these young lads who are fresh out of a course, having a go at maybe doing a tutorial. So good on them for that, and they'll learn as they're doing it. Sometimes you look back at stuff you've done and you think, oh God, what? You know, I've learned a lot. I do it with shows. Every show I do, I normally give myself a hard time about it afterwards, think I could have done that better, this better, whatever. But undoubtedly, there is a difference between a good haircutter and an educator.
Yeah.
And one of the things it does make me a little bit annoyed is every blooming person on Instagram, educator, educator, educator. Yeah. No. You're very good at cutting hair. You're very good at a fade, or you're very good at this haircut that you like to do. But can you stand there and talk about it? It's a bit like a plumber coming to your house who can do a fantastic bending of his pipes, but can he stand in front of 50 people and explain it perfectly how to do that? Yeah. Massive difference.
Yeah, added on to that, you're only as good as your leader. Right. Mm-hmm. And this, I think we're missing leaders now, because what people have realized in the industry is they can do it all themselves. You don't need a barbershop. You can work in your kitchen and do your TikTok and get millions of followers.
Yeah.
You don't need to have anybody mentoring you, pushing you, because there's so much self-employed stuff going on now where people don't need to be in an actual confined space. But what I would say is, what separates a real educator to somebody that is just on the hype is, one, a leader, okay, and two, putting in actual years of learning and being under a team. And I think that's the biggest separation. Again, I'm going to go back to this because it made such a difference in my life, but being under Josh DeMonica, for example, I was with him for 8 years. He was a true, true, true leader to me. He was a massive inspiration. And he didn't just teach me how to cut hair. He taught me how to present on stage, how to hold myself, how to, things to do at these events that makes you more professional than maybe other people. And that sort of leadership, you learn for the rest, you have it for the rest of your life. And I think that a lot of educators now, they're looking online, they're watching, they're inspired. And we're always teaching them that they can be better, they can do better. So we're almost bringing these people in anyway, and then they go, well, then I'll give it a go, I'll give it a pop. And they've been cutting hair for maybe 2 years and they're really good on social media and they're an educator now,
which is fair. I just think the bit between me starting to learn cutting hair and I've done fashion weeks and I've done mags and I've done long career, we know, all of those bits were so brilliant. There wasn't a period that I didn't really enjoy. Even the things where my business went up the chute and I had to shut it down, I learned so much from that experience.
Yeah, I've been there.
And all those experiences make you...
Yeah, you need the experiences.
And I think if you go supersonic from one place to your destination, you miss out on that. Whereas if you take a few more hills and a few more country lanes, you gain.
I actually did that. I mean, I started my first salon when I was 22, but I'd done the apprenticeships. I actually worked in America for a short time for a very good hairdresser called Carmine Mandia. He was at Sassoon's every year. Fantastic precision haircutter. Wonderful. And I learnt loads off him. But even at 22, I was too young. I was too young. Now I look back on it, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, do you know what? I should have just had another 3 years travelling or doing something or working in South Moulton Street here or wherever it might have been for Sassoon's or whatever.
That's it. You shut down avenues, don't you?
But, and you can't blame again the younger guys today. It's because they don't actually know about that. That they see this fast reward thing. Everything's fast rewards. The BMW, the Mercedes,
yeah,
the Rolex watch on social media.
Yeah.
A lot of American barbers dare say it's all about the money they're making and watch me make 1,500 quid today. I hate that stuff.
Yeah.
I hate that stuff. I find it really hard to stomach. But what we need to be teaching is resilience and being able to sort of deal with a bit of adversity and, you know, can you go in and when the clients want you, can you do 10 hours on a Christmas week or whatever, or a busy Saturday, or are you just there for the tattoos and the music and the nice environment? You know, there's more to it than that, isn't
there?
As Vidal Sassoon said, the only place that success comes before working hard is in a dictionary.
Yeah.
And that was what Vidal Sassoon said.
Yeah.
And it's true. All of that run-in
is what gives you, it's along the way, there's adversity. Along the way, there's stuff that dings you.
It's not all unicorns and rainbows, is it?
You know, but it's still really important. The kind of, you know, the tough bits are gives you your resilience.
Yeah, I've had some really tough times with the salons and the way things changed. I used to employ about 30 staff. And then this new self-employed model came in maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Totally changed my business, and I had a real tough time with it. But I know even Josh, I was talking to Josh a short while ago. He was having a lot of team problems, team issues and stuff. And I've talked to every other barber. You will have times that fantastic guy, you love him, he loves you, but it's time for him to move on, and it does leave a
hole. That's the stuff you don't see on Instagram, you see?
Yeah, that's the stuff you don't see. All you see is the speedboat in the hotel in Dubai that, you know, and the lady with the big boob. Anyway, no, won't say that.
Yeah, that's the real stuff that no one's showing.
Yeah,
for sure.
But there's no substitute for hard work. You've got to do the work. You've got to be there in January on a Monday morning. You've got to be there before the staff get there to open that shop, and you've got to leave afterwards usually, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what they don't teach them on.
I think it is that, and like I say, you'd miss out on so much fun. I mean, I agree. I opened my first shop up when I was like 21, 22, got involved with a business partner, encouraged me to do it, and off I went.
Partners.
And off I was off and running. And I mean, I really enjoyed it, but looking back, I don't think I was very good at it. I mean, we had a phenomenally successful period, which was great. But you're doing all your learning in there. And while I was opening up shops, I had to take a rake from doing Fashion Week. I had to stop doing that. I just didn't have the time to do everything. And looking back, I certainly shut down roads that had I continued working for someone else for a couple of years, I would have been able to kind of go a bit further, try a bit more. And I don't know. I think the journey, I think we should sell the journey a little bit more.
Well, you just reminded me. That was my thing, really, that the creative hairdresser that I was and was enjoying my time in America and so on, when I became a businessman, different hat on. And I had a great time for 10, 15 years. But when the shit hit the fan, so to speak, then you're basically putting out fires all the time. And then the creativity's gone because all you're focusing on is paying that electricity bill and the VAT.
Yeah, I've experienced that recently.
Enjoy the ride, guys. Enjoy the ride.
I mean, coming back to you, I mean, I think the mentoring, you know, having that lead
is
really important. When I opened up and realised that I'd definitely bitten off more than I should have done, I started reaching out to other people in the industry just to have a soundbite who are still very good friends of mine that I still, even today as a veteran, I guess, I still call up some, you know, one or two just to kind of go, listen, this is happening, what's happening? Because it's really nice to be able to reach outside and have people that you do admire what they've done or you know they've been there before you. Mm. And I think those are really vital to have those people, you know, chatting to the guys at the Wild team, having Simon to give them the direction, you know, your guys being directed by yourself. What you're obviously doing with yours, having that team spirit is really vital.
Well, funny you should
say. Your sanity more than anything else.
When I'm in the car traveling wherever we're going, as I say, we do tons of colleges. We visit a lot of colleges. The first thing I say to Ollie is, "How's the shop? How's Brad? How's Billy? How's the?" And I think that's our bit of therapy in the car that we'll talk about those things. But going back to like when I was first starting my business, there was a thing called 365. That you might remember.
Yeah, my dad used to do that.
Yeah, with 365, and we'd go on these business builder courses, and you were with like-minded people, and they would talk about business. some of it good, some of it not so good. But now there are new things now. Like, for instance, I know Gianni's got a platform and that's sort of growing and developing. But I strongly think that people should reach out to people on social media if they want to have a chat. I know I've talked to lots of people and I'd welcome speaking to people and give them a bit of advice. I mean, I think I've learned a little bit over the last 40 years. I've forgotten a lot, but I've still got a bit in there.
Yeah.
But it's being able to communicate and, again, take away the ego as well, where you, I think probably for me, I didn't want to maybe talk to the guy down the road because I didn't want him to know my vulnerable side or what wasn't going so well. But I think we should probably try and work a bit more together as a community.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've definitely, for a little while, we really lost that team kind of spirit, in especially in the men's barbering world. We were seeing this, you know, we basically, before, you could only really be in a team to grow. That's how it used to be. You had to be in a team to grow. And, you know, you had to be part of either an artistic team or grow up in the ranks of a salon. And back then, salons were, and I say back then like I'm really old, I'm only 28, but I know that from when I was working with my dad, he was part of 365 as well. Yeah. He's part of a Paul Mitchell team. And
I will know him, won't I?
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. You've got to go kind of through the ranks and you work up and you have all these leaders around. And what happened in the barbering is we were just coming, as barbering was growing, that was phasing away. And I think teams are getting less and less and less now because people have realized, well, hold on, I can get every opportunity that I could get from a team on my own in my kitchen through TikTok or Instagram.
I think that's dangerous.
It's very dangerous, yeah. And I actually said to, I remember when I was trying to get staff, I had no staff, it was just myself in the studio. And I never intended for it to be a full-blown bloody barbershop the way it is now. It's super busy. I never actually intended it to be like that. It was supposed to be like a kind of studio downstairs and you know, a few clients that I've done over the years up the top, just keeping it very chill. And now it's six barbers all fully booked, you know. But I said to my I put up a post and I said, right, that's enough now. I put up a post on Instagram on my story and I said, listen, is there anybody out there that wants to do more than just cutting hair, that wants to have industry exposure, that wants to travel the world, wants to go outside their comfort zone and be a part of a team that's moving forward? And that's when I got my first main guy that's working with me now, which is Julian Kaka. We were just saying that earlier. And he joined me at 18, started traveling around the world with me at 19, 20, been finalists for, you know, all different hair awards. And he's now inspiring his friend that works with me as well. And we're bringing back that team spirit. And I know that Hair in Motion, Charlie Gray, is doing a very similar thing.
Yeah.
He's brought back this team spirit of, he's got like five industry leading educators in his educational brand. And I think that the more we start to see that again, the more people are going to start getting back into building teams rather than singular opportunities.
I think that's so important. Again, that's what we do. We have bi-weekly meetings with our education team. So we've got Brody, we've got Ollie, Patsy, who's a new girl in the team, Daz, and we've just got another guy from Leeds joining us. But we have regular meetings, and you need that to keep the stimulation, the motivation going. And just like Gianni, I have to say to them, we need to do some social media for this or that, or something's coming up, can you do? So you need to keep sort of pushing and peddling. But I think they like that support.
Is it as hard though? Because if your guys are with you every day, they only work with you. So you're kind of more like a football club. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Let's give you Liverpool or City or something like that. That they're your team. You work together. That's it. You're more like a kind of, you know, England manager or something, that you get them. You get them for short periods, but you've got to bring them together.
Well, the benefit
as a group, there's got to be a very different dynamic for both of you.
Yeah, the benefit of what I do is that people are really excited to go to. We were in Taiwan and Amsterdam and Italy last year, so obviously the guys are buzzing to go and they really appreciate being given that opportunity. However, we have had to tighten things up a little bit, and we don't have a big legal contract this big. We just do have an agreement though, that they won't do education for other people without our consent. And because if I'm investing in them and taking them to Taiwan to work with the scissor company, or to Bologna to work with the clipper company, or wherever it might be, I don't want to make that investment for them next week to be going, these are Johnny's scissors, yeah. and I'm selling these now, you know. Yeah. So we need to sort of make sure those lines don't get blurred a little bit. But they enjoy it, you know. Yeah. It's fantastic.
I mean, all, you know, my team are all employed, so all of them are on contracts with us, and I think from a team member's point of view, having, you know, and our contract's like two couple of pages long, nothing too complicated. Mm. It just states exactly what they are.
It gives them that. Pete runs out the till.
Gives them that, but it gives them, you know, it gives the team member a clear know that you have a responsibility too. You know, and I think that's
it's a challenging one. It's a challenging one.
Legal side.
Yeah, it is a challenging one. I mean, I've worked for three different companies now. And some of them top of the game, some of them not so much. And I've tried to take everything that I've learned into what I'm doing now. And what I've learned in terms of keeping someone for a long amount of time is they do need to have their own, not life, but they need to have their own creative freedom and be able to do the things that they also want to be able to do.
Express themselves their way.
I think a lot of people, the reason why teams aren't working as much now is because they feel trapped. Mm-hmm. And when they feel trapped, that's when they go, well, hold on a minute, I can just do it myself. Mm-hmm. So how do you give them the opportunities? How do you give them certain aspects of teaching and learning and growing whilst allowing them to almost have their own brand within the brand? And I think that is, again, this is something that I think is going to be happening a lot more now in the future of hairdressing, because the old school model of everybody under this, you know, and we don't really want that, not cult, but we don't want that mindset of they just feel controlled and they can't spread their wings. Yeah. So I think long run, we have to be able to...
An element of freedom.
Element of freedom, yeah. But it's like, how do you do it, right? How do you give them that?
I think what we do is, obviously my role is I go out and get this work. I get the work in Italy or wherever it might be. And then obviously the guys are really happy to be doing that and I'm building their profile for them. So they can then take that back to their business and their business can be very, very successful. I get the bit about the creative freedom, but also when we're traveling and stuff, you've got to look after people as well. You've got to pay people promptly. You've got to make sure they're fed and watered properly. So we at the back of my mind is, are they the guys having a good time all the time? We don't drink a lot anymore like we did back in the 80s. We sort of quite, try to keep it as professional as possible, but we make sure that we, you know, they get taken out with nice meals and so on and so forth. They get looked after with products that we might get. And again, you know, it's making people feel really valued, because that's the key. Does the person who works for you feel valued, or do they feel like they're constantly being sort of downtrodden and beneath you almost, you know? So that's my little golden nugget with it.
Guys, I think that brings us kind of close to the end of part one. I think the one thing that certainly I've heard out of this that I hadn't extended to or we haven't really spoken about is I hear so many people talking about recruitment's terrible, I can't get anyone, how do you get and we never talk about kind of staff retention or team retention, of how do you keep your guys happy, how do you keep them. And I think as owners or leaders, our responsibility is to look out at them. Our team are our customers primarily.
Yeah.
And I think when you're looking at your team, they're your customers. They're your first customer.
Yeah.
And if your company can be geared around them first, that will pass on to team, because your team's been with you a long, long time and they've got their responsibilities. And your team's pumping down there. I mean, that's getting that amount of business out of King's Cross, where I know there's some brilliant places and some excellent companies in there. Yes, Joe, I'm talking about you. There's some great businesses in King's Cross. So, you're in a shark tank there to succeed. So you're doing it right. Guys, I'm waffling. Thank you very much. I've been the Noble Barber, and we will be back for part two, where we're talking about, I want to talk about brands. I love your branding. I love what the Barber Bash has done. So we'll come back and we'll talk about some brands and lots of other things. Thanks very much.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.